Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Moving Spotlight Podcast. It's an exciting day here. If you hear construction in the background, that's our guests. They are just building a second wing, third wing. Who knows what's going on at the house?
So many wings.
She's loaded like that from what I hear. Totally kidding. I, Corbin, want to jump in today. I think people know I'm the host, John Ruby. You're also my co-host, Corbin Coyle here. The topic is a really fun one. I mean, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. What pet would you want if it was legal? So really, we're talking about illegal pets, illegal. Which is really fun. I said if it was legal, but it's like, what that?
Yeah, illegal pets, that's bad.
Because we love animals. Well, yeah, but as an animal lover, if you could, if you were allowed.
I think I always really liked, I always thought ferrets were really cute, but they're also kind of like, I think they're limited to where they're illegal. I think they're illegal here in California, is my understanding, but not everywhere in the United States. But ferrets, they're adorable. Like they run around, but I also feel like they're real tiny and you might lose. So like, I think that's where I would go with it. What are the little like spiky little hedgehogs?
Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Hedgehogs.
Those ones are definitely, they're just adorable. Like, you can't get out of that one. about you?
Those I've seen like, like they're like in little sinks and they're like bathing. And stuff. Yeah, hedgehogs are adorable. I think ferrets, because people had them, I feel like in Wisconsin, not often, they can be kind of ferocious. Like they're kind of aggressive at times, but they people have those as pets.
I've never been around them. I've seen, they seem like they'd be really cute, but I could also see a little meanness with them.
I mean, I would love to have a baby tiger, like a white, like a snow leopard. Like that would, like as a baby, once they get big, I'm like, this is out of control. Yeah. But as a baby, like those puppies, adorable. And I think it's always also been my dream to have a monkey. I don't know, for some reason, it just feels like fun antics.
I can see you doing that for some reason.
You got a monkey, you know, I don't know. For some reason, I've always wanted to go to Madagascar, and they have like some really cool like monkeys and things down there. I've always thought that
was cool. That's cool. There's a really, speaking of tiger, there's a really rough photo of me when I was in like middle school where I'm holding a baby tiger in Mexico with like my mom and sister next to me. And then I'm also wearing this really crazy fedora. I have these really colorful swim trunks on. It's a lot going on in that photo. I have glasses, braces. There's just a lot going on. But carrying that little tiger, he's heavy. He's like 30 pounds, and they're like little tiny things.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I got to send it to you. It's embarrassing.
I feel like I might have seen that photo. I feel like you might have sent that to me. But yeah, I love it. Well, there's a lot of wonderful. Those are pets you see at the zoo, but there's also a lot of pets we can have. You know? Excellent. Well, I'm excited to get to our guest today. She's a lovely, lovely person. She's an actor, director, and improviser. Let's welcome Lauren Adams to the show. Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Ferrets legal in Maryland because my neighbor had one growing up. Oh, so
yeah. Okay.
I can drop that now, unless she had an illegal pet, but. Yes. She did have a ferret. She had a white ferret.
Interesting. Was it ferocious? Oh, wow. Was it kind of?
Yeah, I never got to meet it. She was like, we decided she was a witch. We like had to set, because she was like a little bit mean, like get off my lawn. And she had a white ferret and like white, beautiful white hair and a huge bun. Mm. And she seemed very old to me at the time. But looking back, I think she just had white hair. And I was like, an old witch. So we made her a witch in our minds. And so we never got close enough to interact with the ferret.
Mm. Yeah.
But. Legal in Maryland.
Legal in Maryland. Gotcha. Yeah. Pets in general. Do you have any pets, Lauren?
I have a dog. I have a rescue dog named Bear, a very sweet boy who's 73 pounds but thinks he's a kitten. So he's a huge pit bull. People are always like, oh, killer. And I'm like, he is so gentle. He just wants to sit in your lap, is really all he's interested in. If I could have an illegal pet, it would be a raccoon.
Oh,
a raccoon.
Yeah.
Have you seen them on the internet? Yeah, they're so cute and they like eat things with their little hands and they climb and they're probably horrible to have in your house, but they're very cute and smart looking to me.
Yeah.
There's a story that Brando used to have a pet raccoon, Lauren. So I have to look up. I'll see if I can find one. Yeah. He used to back in the day, like he tried to keep one in New York City. I don't know how well it went. I think it was out of control, but
there's one video that goes around on the internet where people are in like a Dunkin' Donuts drive-through and there's like a little raccoon just standing in the middle of the drive-through line, like looking up at the window. And then all of a sudden the woman reaches out and hands a donut and the raccoon just runs up and grabs it. And it's so cute. He's like standing on all fours, like just looking up at the thing, like, give me my little glazed donut. And so I want that. That would be my illegal pet. I would want a raccoon.
That's good. My takeaway from that is that everybody loves donuts. Doesn't matter. Everybody
interspecies.
Loves donuts,
it's right? Across the board.
People love it. So, yeah. Well, Lauren, I want to jump into you. have done a lot of improv. How did you get into improv? How did you find that world? That's a topic that comes up on this show. We had, you know, Craig Kakowski, some other improvisers on, but like, how did improv find you, or how did you find improv?
The first like little taste I had of improv was like some short form. I was a theater intern at a really beautiful Newark theater in Sacramento called the B Street Theater, which was started by Buck and Tim Busfield in like the 80s, I believe, or early 90s. And I had an internship there, and that's how I got my equity card, and I worked there for a year. But when I was an intern, one of the like classes we got was like an improv class with one of the company members, and it was short form, but I remember we got to perform it after the show. They would do like an intern showcase once a week. So on Wednesdays after the show, we would like do a little short form improv set with the students that were in his class that was paid and the interns. And it was like really fun. And I remember like really enjoying it. And then when I moved to New York, I wanted to take some improv classes. And so for my 25th birthday, my mom bought me my first improv class. And I tried to take it at Second City, New York, which just reopened like last week, but they had just closed. So I was like calling Second City because I had thought about moving to Chicago at some point, and I knew they were good. And I couldn't get in touch with anyone because they had literally just closed their doors. And so I took a class at UCB, and I have been performing there for like 15 years now. So like that was sort of it. When I took my first class, I remember like my two 101 teachers were Bobby Moynihan and Lennon Parham, who are very successful comedic actors now. And I remember like Bobby was on SNL and Lennon was on a pilot. And I was like, okay, if I do this, I can be on TV. Is like what I remember thinking to myself. Like, if I commit to this and do this, I can be where they are. So that was like a track that I could see like open up for myself.
What do you think with that? What do you think actors/people? What do you think you learn from doing improv? I mean, what, you know, obviously there was that part, but like, you know, when you first started, because I remember when I started improv, there were so many interesting things. Whether it's like the yes and, or just kind of the group mind, you know, what do you remember like kind of pulling and being like, oh, this is really.
Yeah. I think there's a thing that like, I think actors who come to improv versus improvisers who come to acting, like actors who go to improv, you have a leg up in the beginning because you are a performer. You know how to have stage presence. You know how to get on stage and like look like you know what you're doing. You can kind of like fake it a little bit at the beginning. And I think sometimes actors are so used to like having the story and the character and everything kind of handed to them with scripts that you can end up doing a disservice to yourself later on if you don't figure out how to like let go and have fun. So I think like I really did learn how to like make a little bit of a mess. A note I kept getting early on was like, you're doing it right, but like it's not necessarily like that funny because I was not like getting into the mess a little bit. And I found that people who came at it from a non-acting perspective who were just like, I don't know, I do stand up, or I thought it would be fun, or it seemed like, you know, my friends tell me I'm funny, or I'm a 20-year-old and I just don't know what else to do. Like they sometimes would end up like, they would seem worse than I was in the beginning. And then they would kind of lap me because they were willing to kind of like get into the mess a little bit and mess around. So that was something I learned, is like, you got to just be having a nice time. You can't be like worried about doing it right. To be having a nice time.
Did you ever do any dramatic improv as well with that? Or did you just, it was mostly comedic?
Yeah. I mean, so I did a form called The Movie, which is like, you improvise a full movie. You improvise a movie. So you do end up doing like some dramatic stuff when you do the movie. And then also I perform with Baby Wants Candy sometimes, and we end up doing an improvised musical. So like sometimes you end up singing like a really dramatic song. And sometimes those are like the funnier things because you're like, okay, I'm going to like absolutely commit. I'm going to be the best version of this that I know how to be. And so that ends up sometimes being funnier than the stuff that you're trying to be funny doing. And when you improvise movies and musicals, you never improvise comedic ones, because doing a parody of a comedic thing is very bad. It never goes well. It's very desperate. It's very horrible. So you never do like a comedy. We don't improvise comedies. Makes sense.
I was also thinking improv is great for kind of not getting over your skis and not getting ahead of what's happening. I think that's one thing, you know what I mean? Kind of this idea of staying in the present, staying in the moment, because there can be so much, you know, gold, or there can be so much to kind of mine if you're not already like pre-planning your line, you know what I mean? You're kind of taking what's there. And I think that's definitely something, you know, when an actor knows the end of a scene, but trying to be where you are as it flows, right?
Yeah. And I also think sometimes there's like, This is a little tiny version of that, John, but I think when you're doing your self tapes, like sometimes a flub can take someone so out of it. And sometimes the take was like gold. It's like a golden take, and you have a tiny flub, or your reader just skips a line or whatever. And sometimes if you just have that improv skill like sitting there, you cannot blow a take in a self tape or in an audition or like something that, like, because sometimes it's like, man, it's just one tiny little word, and people flub in real life all the time. We forget what we're saying, or we say the wrong word, or we stutter or whatever and say and it's like you don't have to blow a whole take in your self tape rooms or in an audition just because you flubbed. I don't know. So like I think that being in the moment is part of it. Like that thing doesn't take you out of it because it's just built into the fabric of where you are in the moment. Because there aren't mistakes in improv. That's the whole thing. There's no mistakes.
Corbin, do you want to tell the printer story or should I?
You tell it. You tell it
So
better.
Corbin was in my acting class, Lauren. This was amazing. He's doing this scene and he's acting his face off. He's doing great. And we're in like the acting studio, and there's a printer in there. And you know what printers sometimes self-clean? So when they self-clean, it's really loud. So he's in the middle of a scene and the printer's like it just automatically self-cleans. And the scene ends, and I'm like, Corbin, did you notice anything happening during that scene? He's like, the printer. And I'm like, dude, that's a great, it's kind of a mistake, but it's also an opportunity. Like, if you would have said something about it, if it worked as the character, you know, when it works, you would have won the room over. You would have, we would have loved it. We would understand. You're st you know what I mean? And he was like, oh my God. You right? Remember
It
Corbin?
really,
Because it's happening.
It really opened my mind, because I was like, oh, like it was actually more awkward to kind of power through. Like, it's like
Yeah,
everybody
because
hears
everyone
it.
in the room is going like, we hear that printer.
It's really annoying.
We hear that printer. We hear the printer.
Yeah, and then, but it also comes down to taste, because like every time a plane flies over, you can't be like, oh, there's a plane. Like, you know, so you have to figure it out for yourself. But I think improv opens that door, opens those channels. I also think, Lauren, you know, the other thing I like about improv that, you know, I like this idea about getting messy. I also think, you know, for actors, it gets you thinking like that character. It gets you thinking their point of view. If you put them, you know, in another situation, and you know, I always like that, like work, you know, home, and then like a hobby or play, like, you know, you should kind of know how that character is going to respond. You know what I mean? And I think that's an interesting one that improv is really good at a lot of times. You know what I mean? You figure out what is their point of view on this or everything, or how do they see the world, right?
I also think so. This is a story where I'm not going to tell you the name of the actress, but I was on a plane and there was a very famous actress on the plane, flying coach, like very famous actress, like nominated for an Oscar, Oscars actress, very famous. And she's flying coach on this JetBlue flight from Charleston to New York City. And she's sitting behind me next to my friend who I'm traveling with. And I'm hearing her. She's sitting next to my friend and then next to someone who works for the New York Times, who like she knew somehow because they interviewed her for something. And so she's chatting to this journalist and she's talking about young actors, especially in this internet age, and how everyone is too obsessed with looking beautiful all the time or looking good rather than being good actors and diving into roles and getting in the mess and playing messy characters and playing people who are not pretty or attractive or good. And she was like, it's kind of a disservice to this whole business that we're in because you need to be able to say, like, oh, I'm going to play a bad person to the best of my ability, which is like a thing in improv. You never know who you're going to be assigned to play. So you're like, okay, if I have to play this bad teacher, I have to play them to the best of my ability. I have to play them the best that way that I can, even though that's not something that I would like to be labeled as, right? You just have to play it to the best of your ability. And I thought, like, listening to that actress talk about that, I was like, oh man, that's such an interesting take on like the state of the business and like what kinds of things are getting made and what kinds of projects like young famous people are saying yes to. And so I just thought that was really interesting.
I always remember when I moved to LA, because I came from Chicago, and you'd go out in Chicago, and like I used to love to like hit the dance floor. Like I would be like, you know, one of the few guys out there dancing, and it was great. I really enjoyed it. I liked that. And I came to LA, and it was like nobody was dancing really. And then my friend called it, like, he said it's S&M, and I'm like, what is that? He goes, it's stand and model. Everyone's standing and modeling, right?
Oh,
And, right?
dang.
Right, and this has been a years ago, but that always stuck with me. I think it's changed a bit since then. But there's what you're talking about is kind of that energy of like the stand and model. Like, I want to look cool. I want to be cool. I want to look hot. But that performance doesn't, you know, there's very few roles where you're like, okay, you're the hot guy or gal, you know,
right.
Everything else you need to get in the mess. You need to kind of, you know, get ugly, right?
Yeah. And I think we have less interesting movies. We're making all the same kind of thing if we're all worried about looking good all the time.
Lauren, how has improv, would you say, like, helped you book jobs or helped you on set? You know, or how have you used that?
You know what's so funny is that, like, my biggest job is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and there's no improvising on that show.
Oh, really?
People, okay, you didn't expect that, right? Because it's comedy people. But they write such, like, scientifically good jokes, like jokes that could go in the dictionary for, like, this is a comedic joke. Like, the jokes are perfectly timed. Like, every word matters. You need to say the reverend, not Reverend Richard. You need, like, it's science, it's rhythm, it's music. It's, like, really expertly crafted symphony of jokes. And so there's no room for whatever nonsense I have to say. Like, very, 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 very rarely would it be like, okay, we just need something at the end of the scene, so just keep talking. But that would never make it in the show. There never would be improv. I think I have one improvised line in all the seasons and the movie, and it's in the movie. And I thought it was just B-roll of me holding up a bank. And I think I said something to one of the women of the bank tellers of, like, you're going to need to get therapy after this. But I thought it was just, but that is literally my only improvised line in the whole thing. And I thought it was, like, never going to make it in because I thought we were just doing it MOS with no sound just to get the B roll of it, because it's so it's so funny. When I thought, like I told you that story about how I was like, oh, if I do this, if I do improv, I'll end up on TV. So when I booked Kimmy Schmidt, I was like, they know I did UCB. Tina's a Second City person. Like, they know all that stuff.
Yeah.
They know that's why I got this job. That's why. And I went to the first table read, and a friend, Tracy Wigfield, who I knew from UCB, who was a writer on 30 Rock, and she wrote Great News, and she wrote on the Mindy Project, and she was a consultant for the pilot of Kimmy because she had worked with Tina on 30 Rock. So I come into this table read, and I say, Tracy, hi, and I give Tracy a hug, and she says, congratulations, and Tina goes, how do you two know each other? And I said, oh, from UCB, and Tina goes, oh, you did UCB stuff? And I went, oh, like, what am I doing here? Because it was just I had a good tape and a good callback, and that's
what they wanted. Interesting.
So I was like, how interesting that I did. I mean, I'm sure all that training helped me have a good tape and a good callback. But I improvised in my callback, and I remember Tina being like, hi, can you just double check that line and just do the line as written? And I never improvised on set ever again, because in my mind I went, oh yeah, you dummy, Tina Fey, a brilliant writer, wrote a great joke. She doesn't fucking need you to add to it. She wrote the joke.
Do her joke. Yeah, do her joke.
Yeah, do my joke, please. So I took that note, and I'll never forget it. So I will only improvise if you ask me, and not on my own accord.
How was working on that show, since we're in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Great. Really fun. Yeah. Incredible. I mean, like, you're working with the best. You're working with, like, people who just, it's like, you are like, oh, God, I just want to make sure my joke gets in. So you're like saying your joke faster. You're just like, and sometimes I would say a joke, I would be saying the joke, and I wouldn't even get it till I watched the show, and I'd be like, oh, that's the joke. I wish I knew that when I was on set, because it's like a layer on a layer on a layer. So they're incredible. And it was like, as scary as it is for that to be your very first TV job ever, not my first regular job, my first TV job ever. I had never booked an under five. I had never booked a co-star. I had never been on a TV show. And then it's like, okay, so we're going to be filming with Matt Lauer at 30 Rock on Friday. And so everybody know your lines, because we don't want to waste Matt Lauer's time. It's like, it was really like you were forged in the fire. I was like, okay, we're doing this, and I have to do a good job and be professional, because everyone here knows exactly what they're doing.
Did you have, like, a mentor or anybody on set that you were like, how do I do X, Y, and Z? Like, was there anything that was new to you?
Sometimes Sarah Chase and I would shut the door and be like, what the fuck's happening? But no, not really. And, like, you know, if you just, like, keep your eyes open. Like, I remember, like, one time Tina didn't want to be last to set, and she was shooting in season one. And she was like, I don't want anyone waiting. I don't like the crew waiting on me, I heard her say. And so I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I don't ever want to be last to set either because I don't want the crew to wait on me. So it's like, I don't want to be taking up a ton of time in hair and makeup because I want to be ready to go when the crew's ready to go. And so it was like that, that like, oh, okay, like the crew's time is really valuable to these people, or this is really valuable. Saying the writer's lines are very valuable, like knowing what was of value and what wasn't. So those are all really good lessons to just like when you're watching people who've made in hours and hours and hours of TV, you're like, you know, that was
it's interesting, Laura, with what you just said. I kind of feel like with what you were picking up, it's like talent gets you on set. And then once you're on set, it's like a different skill set. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the talent is what got you there. So like, that's good. Put that to the side. And then it's like other things of like you said, of like, you know, not letting the nerves, you know, being on, you know, like those things, which can feel, not that they're small things, but important things. And you pick up on those just by being on set, just by observing, just by kind of absorbing and being ready. You know what I mean? Being around.
Yeah. It. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of talented people who I bet are terrible to have on set. And I bet there's plenty of people who aren't talented who are really nice to have on set.
Yes, yeah. How was another thing on your resume I saw, how was working on Modern Family?
Oh, fun. Yeah. So different. It's so different than Kimmy Schmidt because, first of all, like, I shot the last season. So like they're just an oiled machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
They finished it like 3 o'clock every day. They would all pick their kids up from school. Wow. They also, because they shot doc style, they had a luxury of like, it didn't have to be perfect. Like it didn't have to be covered in the same way. And they shoot two sizes at once. So you're always getting two sizes in one setup. So it's fast. It's really, really fast. And I was like, I need to have my lines known. What I'm about to say seems like an insane thing, but so many people don't come to set with their lines memorized because I think sometimes they want to keep it fresh or they can't put it in their head before they really need to use it. But I'm like, I got to know it and I got to know it before I get there. So I got to be before rehearsal because I just have to know what I'm saying. And I was so grateful to have that, like just to have that kind of like choice of mine to be like, I just have to be so prepared because they moved so fast that there was no time for me to be learning a line or not being like, and what comes next? Because it was really, really quick. They're just doing it. And that is like a really good like example of like, they are making a comedic TV show and they're making art, but like, they know it's work for them. They know how to do the job. The crew knows how to work. It was like so efficient. It was unbelievable. So
yeah, I think, you know, when you got a show like I'm thinking of that or even like Grey's Anatomy, which has been on 20 years, you know, there's certain shows crazy. It's crazy and it turns into a machine. And I think that's where, like you're saying, you got to come ready, especially if you're not, you know, one of the series regulars and feeling comfortable on that set or feeling kind of somewhat prepared, even if you're not super comfortable.
Right.
I try to tell people too, it's you're kind of doing the same thing if you're shooting a USC film, a grad, like it's all kind of the same thing. I mean, it's a different energy, it's a different pressure. But my point is when you come prepared, you know, you're also setting yourself up for success on set. It's not like I'm going to get to set, I'm going to find it. You know what I mean? You don't always have that.
No, you just don't have to think about that too. It's like that's just taking one thing off your plate of like, you know, you're going to have to like deal with blocking and a costume you've never worn before and like, you know, Julie Bowen directed my episode, so she was extremely lovely and she knew how everything worked. But it's like, you just don't know. There's so many variables. Like, just take the ones you can control and like get them out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, like, it feels like you can set aside all that stuff and start to observe. You know, you can be a part and present. And like you're saying, be aware that Tina was saying that stuff. If you're reading your lines, you may have missed that, you know? And
yeah, totally. Yeah. I also, when I auditioned for Modern Family, it was a lesbian couple and I auditioned for the part that I did not book. I think we all auditioned for one part and then I ended up playing the other one because I think they were like, we'll just audition all these women for these parts and then we'll have one play this one and one play this one. So it wasn't even like I memorized those lines for the audition and was like, oh, I'm good to go. It's two scenes, no problem. I was like, oh, I have to memorize this other whole other character and make sure I don't say the lines that I memorized for the audition that are no longer my lines. Yeah. So
why are they repeating the same sentences? I don't know. I guess that's what they wrote. Who knows? Lauren, so you do a show at UCB called Lauren is a Jealous Bitch. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I am a jealous bitch. I am really jealous. I'm really jealous of, like, I watch TV and I'm just like, I want to do that. I watch good movies and I'm like, I just want to do that. And I don't necessarily, like, I'm trying to destigmatize jealousy a little bit because I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. Like, it tells me I am admiring that show or those actors or that performance. And it tells me what I want for my life. I mean, I think it is a good thing to be jealous of someone because I can be like, I'm jealous of you because you have this awesome career. Like, isn't that, it's also a compliment for me to be jealous of
Sure,
you know?
sure.
I don't wish ill will on you. So I think, and jealousy is like, so many people are like, oh, don't be jealous, that's ugly. And I'm like, no, jealousy is like very human and very normal. And we all experience it for different things. And like, I could be jealous of some woman's career and she could be jealous of my family life. And you know, I could be jealous of that person's family life, and they could be jealous that I live in Los Angeles. You know, there's like all sorts of different levels to it. Like, so I decided to have a comedy show based around jealousy where I celebrate jealousy and talk about what I'm jealous of. And then I invite people to perform who I am jealous of. And then after they perform, I tell them very earnestly why I'm jealous of them. And if you've never seen a stand-up comedian be told in all earnestness why someone is jealous of them, it is very uncomfortable and very funny. They simply don't care for it, but I'm going to do it.
Yes.
And I warn them beforehand that I'm going to do it. I'm going to tell them earnestly why I'm jealous of them.
That's
So.
amazing. How is it setting up that show? Because this can be very hard with a lot of moving parts and a lot of mo different people, different guests.
Yeah, I have a great producer, Patrick Cotnoir, who produces George Lucas Talk Show and a bunch of other incredible shows, ASCAT around the city, and online and beyond. He travels with a bunch of the shows. And so he helps me book my guests. And I have a sidekick, Julian Villard, who helps me be brave. And he also sometimes helps book great music guests. So we try to have like a stand-up and a musician and sort of a person of note to speak to. And it's been really, really fun. We had some like really cool people come through, and I can't do it every month because there are too many moving parts
Yes.
for myself to figure out. But every couple months we do one, and it's just been like really awesome. And the Lyric Hyperion has been like a really great home for it the past show. And this next coming show, we have one in March. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about doing more of them, and also just like, again, destigmatizing the old jealousy and letting people feel like it's okay that we are jealous.
Yeah, I was thinking, when I first came to LA and found improv, I was at IO West like every night, Lauren. You know what I mean? I was there every night. I was doing everything I could. I loved it, loved it. And then as you get a little bit older, you're like, I can't be there every night. I mean, I still want to be part of it. I still want to be tapped in. And what I think is important with that is I love that you've created a show, with people that like you are jealous of in a good way, and people you want to, talk to that you want to, either perform with. And I think creating something like that, even if it's less often, I think it's so nice to have stuff that we can control because a lot of stuff is out of our control. And so even if there are moving parts, you've kind of created the show that like you're interested in, and I think that's such a cool thing. So I give you a lot of credit for that because I
Thanks.
feel like, well, because it's so, otherwise there's so, we can sit around so much, you know
Yeah.
what I mean? And
We're
it's like,
waiting
well,
around for everyone else to tell us, like, okay, come now.
yes, okay, come now. And I love that you're putting that on. You also do an improv show, like an all-female improv. You still have that improv group? Yes.
Yeah, we haven't done it in a minute, but we
Okay.
do a really fun, it's the only daytime talk show at night called The Female Gaze, and it's basically a live improvised version of The View, where we have like 15 co-hosts and they all have an opinion, and it's really, really like a fun show, it seems. I remember the first time we did it, I was like really scared because I was like, oh no, this could be chaos. And it's like really magic. There's a lot of really good gifting and listening. And Tessa Hirsch, former guest of the pod,
Yes.
is one of the cast members of that too. And she's just like one of the top people to perform with. So it's
Oh,
really a fun
that's
show. We don't know when the next one of those is, but
okay.
that show never dies. So
I love
eventually.
it.
I saw that you directed a short film called Animal, and
Yeah.
yeah, and I wanted to ask you about the actress Dot Marie Jones because she's come in for like commercials. I mean, she's done tons of stuff, and she's such got such a obviously cool look and great actress, and she's just, I feel like she's had such a history of what she's done that's so lovely in a good way. You know,
she's
I don't know.
The best.
Yes, you want to just talk.
She's one of the best people I've ever worked with. I shot a feature. We were both in a feature called Greener Grass that Jocelyn DeBoer and Don Luby directed and wrote and starred in and. And yes. Dot.
I've seen
is
it
in
actually,
that.
Lauren. I saw it. Oh, yes. Yeah, my friend Will Madden told me about it and I went to So yeah.
It's wild and weird and so fun. And those women they're so talented. So Dot was in that, and that's how I knew her. And then when I was one of the producers of Greener Grass is one of the writers of Animal. And so, you know, basically that part, the character's name is Dot. It was written for Dot Marie Jones. And so, you know, I was like, we can't get will she do it? And so we reached out and she was like, of course. And she came in for the day. And, you know, Kathy Curtin is one of the leads and they're around the same age and they sort of like their careers seem pretty similar. They're like two character actresses who've just been in kind of everything and they'd never met and they know so many people in common and they connected and clicked like instantly on set. It was like this beautiful day-long friendship that I'm sure they still chat. And it was like really magical to connect those two women who I'm sure they've like just always ebbed and flowed out of, in and out of each other's orbits and they had never met. So that was like a really special, but Dot is the best and she's just like so kind and warm on set and open and then just an incredible actor as well. It's just like such a joy to have her around. Big fan.
Lauren, I feel it's interesting. You connected them kind of through you is how I met Tessa. I feel like you have a connection ability. Like, what is it about you?
That's
like
so
you,
nice.
You, it is. No, really. Like you kind of pull people together, whether they realize it or not. Is that something that
that's
you
so nice? I think that about our friend Tessa. I think that about Tessa Hurst, that she's a connector. Yeah. I think it's like, a lot of this business is like connect. Well, it's like, that's the whole point, right? Like we're, it's like human and we're connecting and we're like portraying humans. And, we go to theaters and movie theaters together.
You,
and...
But Lauren, you feel generous with your spirit. That's what I'd say.
Oh, that's so nice.
Generous.
Thank like you.
Even, you know, we were in a you know, kind of a dramatic acting class together, but I always felt like you were always very giving, if that makes sense. Like you were very generous with your spirit, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really nice. That means that's like a really nice compliment. I like, that means a lot to me to hear because I do think like I am sort of like, the connection, being connected to people, I think is like the whole point. Like, why else are we all here at the same time? And not to get too woo-woo, but like, I think that's God is like people connecting to each other. Is like, if that's not the embodiment of whatever God is, like that to me is like really beautiful. And so all this business feels like it can be very disconnected and a lot of like deal making and this and that and the other. But really, like if we can just connect people, oh man, that's the best. And then you just get to work with a ton of friends. Sure, sign me up. I love it.
Do you find do you find yourself like trying to I don't know how to put this, but like you not like keep a list of where like what people can and can't do, like do you, because it seems like you have a great community that like you mentioned you have producers that are helping you out, like how do you find these communities to be able to get projects off the ground and like kind of pushing that ball forward?
Yeah, I mean UCB was a huge sense of community for me in New York, honestly. Can I take control of your podcast? And can I segue this into a question that you told me you were going to ask?
Yeah.
Okay. Advice for actors or people moving to cities to be actors are shrink your pool. Make community for yourself. Make a big city small for yourself. So like UCB was making a big city, New York City, small for myself. It instantly gave me somewhere to go, friendship, classes. It just like gave me so many things. So like if you can figure out how to make a city small for yourself and make community for yourself, you will last longer because you have people rooting for you, you have people expecting you, you have people like collaborating with you. So, and it also gave me the opportunity to collaborate with people who were at the same level as me, which was huge because it's like when you're learning a language, you don't want to speak Spanish with someone who's fluent. You want to speak with Spanish with somebody who's speaking at the same level you are. So you feel confident to make mistakes, right? That's sort of how I feel about like when you move to a city. Number one is get a day job and take the mental stress of financial stress off of your plate. Like, no, you can pay for your stuff. No, you can pay for your place. No, you can pay for your groceries. So get that stress off your plate. And then number two is make the city small for yourself. Like find a community, find a class, find a place to like, you know, see shows, do all that stuff, like make it small for yourself. So yeah, that is my advice.
I love that, Lauren. I love that the finding that job that works and then making it small. My sister and I went visited a friend of hers in Reykjavik. His name is David. And we were like, this is a small city. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's small. He's like, it's not that small. And then as we were walking into town, he saw like three people he knew. And we're like, David, this is a small town. And then I swear, we're by the main drag. His parents drive by in their car and they're like, David, John! You know, and we're like, this is a small town, even though it's a city. And
isn't that whole country so small that they have to like have a dating app to make sure they're not related?
Yes, I think they do. And but here's the other thing. Reykjavik has as many people, if you look it up, as about that are in SAG-AFTRA. So we're, it's like, yes, so think about that. We're like competing with a whole city. Look up those numbers. I mean, I'm not good with numbers anymore. I used to be, but they're pretty similar. So the point is, I love what you're saying, because how are you going to connect with, you know, 250,000 people or whatever it is? You're not going to. So make that small pool. I love that. Yeah. And you know, make, so you feel that and finding people that are kind of at your level.
Yeah. You know, everybody, so you feel not scared to fail. You just want to be able to fail. Mm-hmm. That's how you are successful. A friend of mine was recently talking about going to see a kid's piano concert, and she's like, I got emotional during it because these kids are like not good, and they kind of know they're not good because they're learning how to play piano, and everyone's coming to watch them, and they march themselves out on stage and take a bow and very poorly play like the entertainer, and then they bow again, and they're scared and they don't want to do it and they don't like it. And when do adults ever publicly go do something that they're bad at? We would never. You would never. You'd be like, well, I simply won't. I'll do this thing I've been an expert at since I was a little kid. You want me to do that? Great. But you'd never just like, and that's why improv, I think, was good as an adult, because it was like, oh, they basically at the beginning, they're like, you're going to do a very bad job at this. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just have a fun, nice time doing it, because you're going to do a very bad job. Mm-hmm. So don't go perform publicly, you know, with a bunch of masters until you're ready. Perform with people who are speaking the same language as you, who you don't feel scared to like fail around, who you don't feel scared to like write a bad script with. You have to do all that. You just have to do it.
Do you have any advice when it comes to practicing outside of class, like when it comes to improv? Or is there some, because oftentimes, you know, it is just kind of getting into the fire, like you're saying, fail and that's okay. But like, was there like some sort of way to kind of let people, you know, let go of those handles a little bit and just kind of practice alone or with a friend or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, when I took Improv 101, I remember one of my teachers being like, get a practice group and be bad and like practice once a week and then do shows. And that's what we did. We like started a little improv group and we like practiced once a week, and we did a bunch of really, I'm sure, bad shows. We thought we were doing great. And that was really it. And that's how we got better, and how you got better at doing shows and better doing scenes and better and better and better is like you paid the money and hired a coach and rented a space, and you got together with eight people who were also at your level, and you just did it. You just did it every week. So that just doing it is
just showing up.
It also is. Yeah. It's also a trick, like trick yourself into feeling like you're working until you get hired to work. Like class can do that, or practice groups can do that, or like, you know, all these little things can make you feel like making your own stuff can make you feel like you're working until people start to pay you to work.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I liked, Corbin, with that, I used to kind of do, being a bit of a nerd who had Encyclopedia Britannica books, if anyone remember those. That was before Google, folks. And
yeah, I remember. Well,
you remember. Thank you, Lauren. Corbin doesn't. But what I think is kind of fun, if you're by yourself, because I love that idea, and yeah, we used to do that too at iOS, is like, if there's a topic you're kind of interested in, why not deep dive into it? And then if a scene comes up in that world, or you kind of, you know, it works with what you're doing, you're kind of an expert in it, and you can really talk, you can really say, which is fun. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
And people don't have to know you did pre-research. People don't have to like, but you know, I think that's kind of cool. And you know, so you don't have to, I think sometimes people want to make it really challenging on themselves. So they're like, I'm not going to talk about stuff I actually already know. It's like, well, why not? That could be really funny. It's something, if you know all about hockey, let's do a hockey scene, and you'll know everything, and everyone else will know nothing, and that'll be funny. You know what I mean? So you,
like,
that's kind of fun.
I was like the opposite improviser of that, because like, I, not that I'm not a nerd. I think nerds are cool. I was like a dork. I didn't even have like nerd culture. I wasn't like into D&D or any kind of nerd culture of any kind growing up. I didn't really watch a lot of movies. And so I feel like when I got to UCB and there was like a lot of nerd culture coming up, I just didn't know it. I was just deeply uncool. My parents are uncool. I was just into musicals. Like, that's it. Like, if a musical scene comes up, I'm in. But I didn't even, so like, I felt like I was like, oh, if people bring up like a ton of Star Wars references, like, I've seen them, but that's about it. I got no D&D references. I got no like anime references. I got no video game references. So I was like, I had the opposite. I had no knowledge, which was fine. I can fake it. And also I'll say the wrong thing so confidently that that's now the way we say it. So here we go. Like, I was like, I didn't have any nerd culture, or like, I didn't have deep music references. I can't tell you like, I can't name like 50 Pogue songs, you know, like some of these dudes could. And I was like, I was deeply uncool in a different way than these people were.
Yeah. We had Brian O'Connell on the show, and I used to improvise with him at iOS, and he's one of those guys that like every music thing, I feel like he knows every, like he'll know like the third drummer of like whatever Aerosmith out of seven or something. And I'm like, I don't know one drummer from Aerosmith, you know what I mean? And you're just like, I can't, if we go that pool, I'm out, you know, I'm lost. Yeah. Or I'm just going to have fun.
I don't know any of that. I have no, I cannot play that game at all, but I'll play something else.
So. Okay, Lauren, when I was doing my research, I'm curious, I have not heard of Elon University, and not there's anything wrong with that, but I'm curious about it since you went there.
Yes. Yes, I went to Elon University in North Carolina. Yes. It was called Elon College when I applied, and then it turned into a got a different accreditation and turned into a university in my freshman year. I was the freshman class to go to Elon University. Mm. I went because they have a really great music theater program. It's one of the best. I don't really use that anymore, which is so funny, but I loved going there. I loved it so much. It was like, it's a beautiful school. It's like a really tiny liberal arts school with a great music theater program. So I got a BFA in music theater from there. And there's like a million of them on Broadway now. Like every Broadway show has like five Elon kids in it. So that's why one of the reasons I wanted to go there, but I also applied early decision before I even got into the music theater program. So I was sort of like hoping I would get into the theater program, and still wanted to go to Elon no matter what. It's like a small liberal arts school, used to be affiliated with the Church of Christ, but is no longer affiliated with it. Used to be called the Fighting Christians, was our mascot. It looked kind of like the Fighting Irish. It was like a big fat kind of Quaker guy with his fists up, which doesn't really go together. But and then they changed it to the Phoenix when I was a freshman, when it became a university. And yeah, it's a really beautiful campus. It was a really nice place to go to school. I got like a liberal arts style college experience, but also had like a kind of conservatory theater experience, which was really nice. So.
Yeah, I find it interesting, you know, people that didn't go to school for acting at all, went for musical theater, you know, got their, you know, got a BFA, got an MFA, you know, it's very, I think it's very varied on what people, you know, do and pull. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks for asking. I love Elon. Long live Elon, as we say.
We get to a fun part of the show now, which is your
I'm best. Scared.
Bad acting. Don't be scared, Lauren. Now.
I know.
Corbin did pull a long one for you. This is a long ass quote. Okay. But it's kind of a fun one. It's wacky because you do comedy. We gave you a fun, wacky one. All right. So this is from do you ever watch I Think You Should Leave?
Tim Robbins.
Okay.
Oh, I know exactly what scene this is. I love it so much.
I know. His stuff. Corbin and I are on I Think You Should Leave Now kick. So chode jeans. So this is a quote from one of the sketches. And so put your own spin on it, you know, have fun with it and just, we'll see where it goes.
And I'm supposed to do a bad job.
Do bad. Yes, exactly. Have fun with it and play with it. Yeah. Be bad.
I used to say it was a piece of shit. It's not anymore. I'm not anymore. Glass house, white Ferrari. Live for New Year's Eve. Sloppy steaks at Trifoni's. Big rare cut of meat. Water dumped all over it. Water splashing around the table makes the night so much more fun. After the club, go to Trifoni's for sloppy steaks. They'd say, No sloppy steaks, but they can't stop you from ordering a steak and a glass of water. Before you knew it, we were dumping the water on those steaks. The waiters were coming to try and snatch them up, and we had to eat them as fast as we could. Oh, so nice.
Oh, so amazing. It's such a good quote.
Great job, Lauren. Oh my God,
sloppy
Corbin.
steaks is such a good, funny, specific.
It's
And to
so
be like,
specific.
oh, but they can't stop you
They
from
can't
ordering.
stop you.
They can't stop you. You gotta eat those sloppy steaks fast.
Gotta eat those sloppy steaks.
That's one of my husband's favorite shows, so he's gonna be very thrilled.
He's good. Good. We picked a good
Listen
one.
to this app.
Corbin, do you have a redirect or anything?
I do. I wanna hear it as like the world of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Like there's kind of that like very
Okay.
bubbly, like yeah, that
Okay.
kind of atmosphere.
Used to say he was a piece of shit. He's not anymore. I'm not anymore. Glass house, white Ferrari, live for New Year's Eve. Sloppy steaks at Trifoni's. Big rare cut of meat with water dumped all over it. Water splashing around the table makes the night so much more fun. After the club, go to Trifoni's for sloppy steaks. They'd say no sloppy steaks. But they can't stop you from ordering a steak and a glass of water. And before you knew it, we were dumping the water on those steaks, and the waiters were coming over and like trying to snatch them up, and we had to eat them as fast as we could. Ah, I miss those nights. Was a piece of shit, though.
Oh, that was
Exactly
great. That was it. That was it. That was awesome, Laura. That was hilarious. Oh my God, I love that. That version was amazing. That was there was something so sweet about it because it
Yes,
was like,
yeah.
I just love doing this, you know, like
I love
you can't
sloppy
slam.
steak.
You can't be mad at me for like enjoying this. You know, why do they
No.
get mad? I don't understand, you know? Oh my
Well,
God.
that's like Kimmy's a little Amelia Bedelia. Like you'd be like, we gotta go get sloppy steaks at Trifoni's, and she'd be like, we pour water all over. She wouldn't know, you know? She wouldn't know.
So she'd do
She's
it.
been in
That's
a
why
bunker. She wouldn't know.
she wouldn't know. That's why it worked. That was why it worked. Oh my gosh, Lauren, this was amazing.
Thank you.
I love so much stuff you said. I love this idea about kind of getting messy with it, getting, you know, whether it's improv or
Sloppy
auditions,
steaks.
sloppy and getting sloppy, getting wet steaks.
Yeah.
This was lovely. Thank you so much. We really, really
Thank
appreciate
you.
it.
Thanks for having
And
me.
you know, of course, your experience, what you've done, what you're doing, and just your advice you shared. Really lovely, lovely, lovely. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Vince.
Lauren, if people want to find out more about you or come to one of your shows, where can they go to find out that info?
Yeah, my Instagram is I'm Lauren Adams, the contraction for I am. I am Lauren Adams. And I post all my show information there. I have another, I don't know when this episode will come out, but I'll have another Lauren Adams is a Jealous Bitch coming out in the next couple months. And then can I plug one thing?
Absolutely.
If anyone is able, please donate to your local food bank. They're imperative for livelihoods and lives. I personally donate to the LA Food Bank. So rather than plug a project, I'd rather plug the food bank.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. I have helped out at that big food bank
It's
before,
awesome.
Lauren. It's
It's really
awesome. It's a
awesome.
great, they push through a lot of
They
food
do
in a
really
good way.
necessary, incredible work. So $5 is
Yes.
enough.
Yeah. I
$5 is
love
enough.
it. I love it. Excellent. Well, thank you, Lauren. I love that. Love that plug at the end. It's always allowed and encouraged. And thank you so much
Thank
for being
you.
here. This was
Thanks
lovely.
for having me. This was such a
Of course. So good
blast.
seeing you. All right. All right. Bye, Lauren. Enjoy the rest of your day. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to the
Moon and Fox Eye Podcast.